All right, cool. We'll let it go naturally. I'm not like a big like intro person, but if you think I should do an intro, you like them? Okay, yeah, I'm not a big intro person. Yeah, perfect.
Just go ahead and introduce.
Yeah. I'm sitting here. I'm with Juan Carlos. Is it senior trial attorney?
Yeah, senior trial attorney. Right.
First time. Let's go. What is that? What's a senior trial attorney? What is that exactly?
So for us, it basically means that we've done a lot of trials, right? Okay. So we've done evidentiary hearings, we've done domestic violence trials, we've done divorce trials, parentage trials. So you have to have the experience and comfort presenting the case before the judge, calling witnesses, presenting evidence. Okay. It's for when we have highly contested cases.
Gotcha.
Often cases resolve. So if we're going to trial, it's because it's been a heated case.
Okay, got you. So it's not nothing where like you have to like, I have no idea about any of this stuff, but it's not like you have to take a test. It's just really like your tenure in the space, basically.
Correct. It's the experience.
Okay. That's dope. Oh, congrats. And how long you've been with us? It's been
a month now.
Dang, that went by fast, bro. Yeah, it did. How are you liking it?
It's great. No, I definitely chose well when I decided to move, right? Mm-hmm. I was looking for a long-term fit. I think I found the long-term fit. Mm-hmm. I like the clients that we have here. They're, for the most part, outstanding guys who are trying to get, you know, their life in order, mm-hmm. get some situations remedied so they can see their kids, right? Yep. Remedy excessive child support, spousal support, whatever the case may be. But they're just, you know, trying to do right. And it's easy to advocate for them when they are making the right moves.
Yeah, I like it. And before you came here, where were you at, if you can say? Were you at, or you don't have to say the company, or were you at a law firm? Were you?
Yeah, I was at a law firm. I was doing family law as well. Uh-huh. So I've been doing family law now for, I'm in my seventh year.
Okay.
But I'm close to 10 years in as an attorney. So family law kind of has become my bread and butter and what I only do.
And that's what I was going to say. It seems like you like it. I talked to some of the attorneys and they're like, your family law is kind of like, you know, people assume it's easy and people think it's like the one where it's like, oh, like it's family law. But like, from what I understand, it's one that people like can dread and it's very, very hard. So what makes you want to do family law versus any other type of?
You know, it's interesting because I had a similar experience when I was in law school. I did an internship in family law and was kind of not ready for family law because family law is I was not ready for family law. So it was a learning experience, right? That's why I did it. I wanted to test out the practice area and see if it was a good fit for me. And at the time, it definitely wasn't. I think part of what happens is these cases are very emotionally charged. Mm-hmm. And so unless you're ready to deal with high emotion and often high conflict, then it's off-putting for lawyers. So a lot of, for instance, in law school, they say, I'm more of a businessman, right? Yeah. Like I want to have a win-win situation, like entering into a business partnership or something. Whereas in a divorce, that's not the case, right? Sometimes we do settle cases in an amicable way, but that's not the standard, right? It's usually you settle after you've been litigating for a while. So it's high conflict, you're going at it, and then people either tire out of litigating or they exhaust their resources and they finally realize, okay, let's settle kind of thing, right? But, and that's why I think a lot of lawyers don't do it because there's always, you're splitting up a partnership mm-hmm. instead of forming one. Mm-hmm. And not everyone wants to deal with that, right? Like the collateral damage that happens when a divorce ends or a relationship ends. And now it's like, who's going to get the kids? Who's going to get the dog? Who's going to get what from the relationship?
Yeah.
And unless you have that, I kind of think you need emotional maturity to deal with these kinds of cases. So if you're a young attorney, right? Like let's say you went straight from high school to college to law school, and now you're licensed and you're 24 years old, mm-hmm. you probably haven't even had a long-term relationship.
Right.
So to then deal with someone's long-term relationship coming to an end, it can be overwhelming in the sense that you just aren't ready to deal with that kind of conflict. And I think for myself, when I first dabbled in family law as a law student, I wasn't ready for it, right? I wasn't ready for the kind of conflict that I faced in the cases. But it eventually became when I was a solo attorney and have my own office, that the market dictated family law for me. I had dabbled in it during law school, and here I was, hung my shingle, started a business, and all the clients that were hitting me up were looking for a family law attorney. So at the time, I had no luxury of turning anyone away. So I'm like, I'm doing family law now. So it started off from becoming like 80% of my cases to 100% of my cases. And I've been doing family law ever since. And I think by that point, I had already matured. My frame of mind was different. Yeah. And I think I excelled at it.
Yeah. Do you think like, sorry, damn, you gave me so much. Do you think, okay, let me ask you this. Is there something specific about you or like an experience that you feel like gave you the gas in the tank to be able to deal with it? Because I know you said like you have to kind of be emotionally mature, like, you know, having the certain relationships and just that experience to not just go in the courtroom and know the law, but to just basically be able to deal with the psychology of what's happening between person A, B, the other side, the judge. Like you're battling this. It's like this invisible warfare. Maybe that's going on. I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but are there certain experiences in your life that gave you that?
Well, it's interesting. Definitely this area resonates a lot with me. So my parents divorced when I was 12 and there was domestic violence in the home. So I've dealt with a lot of what my clients are facing. And since I was a child when I went through that, I can relate to how the children are caught up when their parents are either divorcing or splitting, whatever the case may be. Yeah. And I do inform my clients from my perspective and life experience what it must be like and encourage them to put themselves in the shoes of their children to see how they're going to be impacted by all of this. Because oftentimes, I'll give you an example. When you have two parents that are splitting up, they don't necessarily want to communicate directly. And so they'll say to their son or daughter, like, oh, tell your mom this, tell your father that. And the children don't appreciate being caught up in the middle.
Yeah.
Then they feel like they have to take a side and they're otherwise compromising their loyalty to one parent or another.
Yeah.
And they'll say whatever or do whatever to keep the peace. But it's such an unfair position to be in as a child.
Yeah.
Because they shouldn't be caught up in the middle. And often as an attorney now, I have to correct even bad behaviors when my clients are doing it, right? Stop using your child as a messenger.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be caught up. They shouldn't know about the whatever drama is between you and the other person, right? And it's hard to think about it that way because you don't want to address it. I mean, I sometimes have to address it when the other side is doing it, right? Mm-hmm. And either reach out to that side directly if they're not represented by an attorney or reach out to the attorney to correct their client. Most of our clients don't know, like you were saying, right, how the legal process unfolds.
Yeah.
So I am educating them on the legal process at the same time that they're dealing with it personally.
Yeah.
And so sometimes they're doing things that they probably shouldn't do, not because they want to be spiteful or, you know, get the children caught up in the middle. Simply they may not know. And that becomes my job to kind of coach them through the process and correct whatever, you know, bad behaviors are happening, not because it's with ill will, like, or ill intent, but because they often just don't know.
Yeah. You said you kind of start, or not kind of, you started your own practice and was doing it. How long were you doing it for?
Almost, yeah, 4 years. 4 years.
Ooh, that's big, dude. What's the, like, most businesses don't make it past like a year or 2 years or something like that? So that
a lot of businesses, they fell. I mean, I could have continued. I just didn't want to. So when I was doing my solo practice, right, I felt like I had two full-time jobs, right? Because I lawyered on a full-time basis, but I also had to run a business on a full-time basis. Yeah. And so rather than working two full-time jobs, eventually I just decided I'm just going to lawyer, let someone else run the firm, right? Like the business side of the firm.
Yeah.
And it's a relief to not have to deal with that because it's time consuming. It's you have to meet your overhead, right?
Yeah.
Like we have a large staff here at Real Fathers, right?
It's huge.
And that's a lot of responsibility to meet the overhead.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd rather not think about that, right? Like, I'd rather only focus on my cases and how I can help my clients.
Yeah. Do you, and I mean, Like, now that you're on the other side, you feel like you're able to put more into the clients?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Because I'm not overextended, right? Mm-hmm. When I was doing both full time, mm-hmm. I had a limited amount of time to lawyer. So I also had to cap the amount of clients I had at any given time. And you, as a solo, you experiment in different ways, right? Trying to hire the correct staff to mm-hmm. help you to scale your business up. But that's also a trial and error situation. Sometimes you hire people that don't work out and you have to let them go and redo whatever work they did or were supposed to do, right? Yeah. And it's hard. It's hard. But, I mean, here, for instance, I don't got to worry about that. Yeah. We have other people who worry about having qualified attorneys, qualified paralegals, support staff, and everything else running smoothly. So it's great to be at a place where I have the support staff that I need, and mm-hmm. I can only focus on the real aspects of lawyering that are important, right?
Yeah.
Like winning in court for our clients, right? Advocating for their rights.
Yeah. And you came in, you won your first day or something like that. Wasn't it something crazy or something like that? You came in, they were like, yo, he smashed them.
I've had some successes. Yeah, definitely, since I've been here. It's, I mean, but that's expected, right? Yeah. So when I was hired.
I like that. That's good energy. That's good energy.
That's why they hired me as a senior trial attorney, because they wanted someone who can hit the ground running and just pick up a case, study it, know what to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I definitely do know what to do because I have the experience and practice.
Yeah, we like it. Okay, let's take it back just a little bit. Because I'm sure you probably, I don't know, were you doing like other things besides law at some point in your life?
Yeah.
I'm sure, right?
So I got into the legal world kind of early on.
Okay, like how, at what period in your life?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm such a non-traditional attorney because I was a high school dropout. So my first job kind of after I dropped out of high school was in the legal world.
Can he say that right now? Or can you say that on camera?
I think
you don't need a high school diploma to do it?
No.
Oh, okay. All right, go.
Well, so, right, like after I dropped out of high school and became a legal assistant.
Okay.
Was basically my title. So actually take a step back, right? So I first saw the law. So I went to a law and government high school.
Mm-hmm.
And at my high school, we had courtrooms. So part of my high school education was geared towards us becoming attorneys.
Got it. Okay.
So, you know, we got to use the courtrooms. We put on trials. So I was exposed to the legal world or what I thought was the legal world early on, because I kind of always knew that I had a knack for argumentation and, you know, the legal dramas fascinated me on TV. So I sought that kind of education out. Did end up dropping out. And when I did drop out, because I had already had exposure to the legal world, I decided to become a legal assistant.
Got it.
And enjoyed that for several years until eventually I decided to go back to college. And back then, you could start college without even having a high school diploma or GED. And eventually, I transferred to UCLA. And
oh, fire.
At UCLA.
Okay, rewarming up.
So yeah, when I was at UCLA, I had already kind of changed, because when I was at UCLA, I had different type of like management, like sales jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I was going to become a business executive. I had been given an offer to become an executive, like a junior executive at Nordstrom.
Okay.
So my trajectory was going to be, you know, I'm going to eventually probably just go through their internal program and become a corporate exec or go to business school. But that's where my mind was. And in my senior year at UCLA, I was looking for a volunteer opportunity. So I've always, you know, wanted to help people and give back to the community. That's always been some value that's been instilled in me since I was very young. So here I am looking for opportunities to volunteer. And then I ended up volunteering at the Inglewood Courthouse, helping legal as an assistant to people representing themselves, right? So the self-help centers is where I was volunteering.
Got it.
And then I realized how much I enjoyed helping people, and especially with what is often a worst case scenario, right? Mm-hmm. If you're caught up in the courts, that's generally your worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Right? No one's happy to be in court.
It's not looking good, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
If you're in court, it's because you have problems.
Yeah.
So, for sure. And, you know, the cost of representation is often very high for most people, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And most people don't have the means to hire attorneys. So that's why I was at the self-help center and I thought, wow, this is a good way to help people make a difference and like get back to the community. But it also kind of brought me back to the roots of wanting to be a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
So I applied to law school kind of on the fly,
mm-hmm.
and then went to law school. And then I decided instead of going a business direction to only go the legal route.
Yeah.
But again, I kind of got that itch back for business because that's when I started my own practice.
Yeah.
So I've oscillated between those worlds. I kind of merged them in the legal world, but now I'm just happy to lawyer.
He's doing his thing. What has been like the hardest part about just this world that you're in?
It's very daunting to represent people, right? Because you're representing people in what may be the only time they're caught up in the legal world.
Okay.
And it has significant consequences. So in family law, the consequences are enormous. Am I going to lose my child, right?
Yeah.
Am I going to get to spend time with my child?
Yeah.
Often the money isn't even the biggest stresses, but it can be, right? Let's say you don't have children and you only married. Well, you build a life with someone, and let's say, you know, for whatever reason, you're ending it, you were betrayed or whatever the situation may be. Now you're worrying about, we built all this together, and now how is it going to be split? Is it going to be a fair split? Am I going to lose out because the other side had a lawyer and I didn't?
Mm-hmm.
And so all that I've worked for is now gone. And people really want someone that understands that understands how much is on the line.
Yeah.
And it's willing to go to bat for them, right? Fight for them so that they get their fair share.
Yeah.
And that's what I do, but that's also a lot of responsibility, right? Because I have people's lives in my hands. And if I drop the ball, that can have serious long-term consequences for them. So I do take my responsibility seriously. People, you know, sacrifice a lot to have that representation. And so we have a commitment to our clients to not drop the ball, to do everything we have to do to get them what they deserve.
Yeah. Do you feel like the judge or the courtroom, like, do you feel like they play it fair? Or do you feel like, and maybe it's not just a black and white, like, no, they don't play it fair, they do. But, like, are there times when you're in the courtroom and you're just like, man, like, this guy's, like, or this woman is just playing it foul? Is that ever a thing in the courtroom?
I mean, it does happen.
Why is that? Because I hear that, and it's like, why is that? I don't know, is it biases or, like, I don't understand.
So it's not so much, like, well, I'll contextualize it, right? I do think that judges, for the most part, want to make the right calls, right? They want to make the right decisions. They don't like to be appealed oftentimes. They don't like to be second-guessed. They want to get it right the first time.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certain, especially in family law, there are certain gray areas that are very complicated. So, for instance, if what we're deciding is, okay, the parties have a house. The house is worth X amount of money. They're supposed to each get half.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have $1 million house, they're each supposed to get half.
Mm-hmm.
That means $500,000. Easy enough, right?
Yeah.
Crunching numbers is often the easy part
because
there's a paper trail. We can figure things out. Who did what, who paid what, who owes what, and then divide it half and half fairly, right?
Yeah.
Where it becomes hard for the courts and for us, the attorneys and the parties, are the gray areas. What's the best interest of the child? Often, that's our legal standard for deciding custody and visitation.
Mm-hmm.
So who should have the kids most of the time? Let's say after the split, one parent lives in San Bernardino County, the other one lives in Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? Children have to go to school in one county.
Mm.
They're not going to be split between two counties and go to two schools.
Right.
So now the court has the tough decision of deciding which county should this child live in.
And that's a, like, even just hearing you say that, because I never thought about it like that, but, like, That's a crazy decision. Like, who's going to spend more time with this child that they both birthed? That's a crazy.
Right.
That's a
crazy. And if you have two excellent parents.
Yeah.
Well, it's even harder.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? It's easier when one parent is an alcoholic and the other parent is sober, right? Like, well, we're going to trust more the sober parent to take the kids to school. Yeah, yeah. And the alcoholic parent is probably going to be more derelict in their responsibilities and, you know, take them late, miss more days.
Oh, my God. Yeah, yeah.
So it's harder when you have two outstanding parents.
Yeah.
Because obviously they both want to spend the most time with the child.
Yeah.
But the court has a tough decision. And so do we, right? Because, yes, we want to argue for the best interest of the child, but often it may be so close. It may be within that gray area where we have to leave it up to the judge. And we also lose control of the situation when we leave it in the hands of the judge.
Got it.
Because my outstanding parent may not win that decision.
Yeah.
Not because, let's say, my client, the father, is a bad father or an irresponsible father simply because the court decided it that way.
Sheesh. I like it. Okay. I'm going to go and I have like a couple, call them rapid fire, not rapid fire, just a couple straight line questions and then we can try to see where we at on time. How long?
25 minutes right now.
Damn, we be cruising through these. Okay.
I have a call at 4. Is it 4?
What time is it?
Oh, 3:59.
3:59?
Yeah.
We can
let's do the rapid fires and then we'll go.
I'll get you too. So this one is for you. What is the, like, describe that father that you are like happy and like the father that you want to represent. What does that father look like?
So for me, the father I want to represent is the father that it wants to do the best for their kids, right? Someone who is just committed to doing whatever is in the best interest of the child. That's my favorite client. Because they're putting their child first.
Right? Yeah.
Like in a divorce, I want my client to think from the child's perspective.
Yeah.
Because that makes my life easier. It makes the judge's life easier. It's the best case scenario.
I like it. What would be, I guess, your advice to someone who wants to get into family law or at least be in your position where you are now?
Yeah, they work hard. And my advice to people who want to become lawyers is work at a law firm before you go to law school. If you do not like the day-to-day of the law firm, of the legal world, then you're not going to like the practice of law. It's not easy. The day-to-day is not easy. Yeah. So it's best to have exposure before you commit to $200,000, $300,000 education and rather than after.
Yeah.
Because I know attorneys who regret having become attorneys, but there's no other career for them that is going to afford them the ability to pay back the student debt or whatever it is.
100%.